All right, let's call this meeting of the House Health and Social Service to order. It is 3:05 p.m. on April the 8th, 2014. Present is Representative Keller, Representative Seaton, Representative Reinbold, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Representative Higgins. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. And also let the record reflect that we have Senator Giesel with us today and the Commissioner Bill Struer. And if I missed anybody, I apologize. Also today on our House Recording Secretary, we have Butch Carver. Our LIO moderator will be Kathleen Nyson. Our committee aide is Julie Morris. If you need anything, just raise your hand and she will come help you. A little housekeeping is let's turn off our cell phones. They may interfere with our recording devices, and we don't want that to happen. And I still haven't got my donut for the year, but I will if the phone goes off. So let's keep our phones off. Okay. With that, we on the docket today, we have Senate Bill 169, CS SB 169, and may have a motion to bring the House CS SB 169 before the committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move SB 169, 1219, as version Delta, before the committee for discussion.
Hearing no objections, House CS SB 169 version D is before the committee for discussion. And I believe we have my chief of staff, Tom Suttler, will come up and talk about if there were changes made.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill today. For the record, my name is Thomas Suttler, and I'm chief staff for Representative Pete Higgins, Chairman. SB 169, we have come up with a committee substitute for this bill that we believe meets all the needs, and I'll briefly walk you through, if I can, the sectional analysis, and then we'll go through the changes. Section 1 of the bill establishes a statewide immunization program with State Vaccination Assessment Council and assess the requirements for vaccine assessments, reporting and penalty for assessable entities and other program participants, and creates a vaccine assessment account. In Section 2, we have definitions. Section 3 amends Title 21 of the insurance to require assessable entities provide information and pay assessments. Section 4 adds the vaccine assessment account to the list of program recipients authorized in the budget. Section 5 repeals the act on January 1st of 2001. And if I might, I'd like to explain that sunset date on there. The thought was being that we wanted to have give the program 3 years to phase in and then 2 full years of operation, and to do that and give a full 5-year period, that 2021 would be the year, since it expires in January. That means that the bill would have to be brought up for sunset in 2020. So that would meet with that.
And do you want to also, since we're there, talk a little bit about the date of the January 1st period being a calendar year for the accessible entities instead of
right.
our calendar year, which makes it easier for them,
right?
Because they have to deal with the accounting portions of it.
Right. In Section 8, we've changed the effective date to be January 1st of 2015. There's a couple of things that does for us. One, it coincides with the accessible entities and the providers as they work off a fiscal calendar year, and we work off of a June to July fiscal year. The other thing that provides for the department is an opportunity to expend those existing funds that they have in the HB 301 account before this bill takes effect to purchase vaccines without hindering them in their purchase program. And let me just make sure I'm speaking correctly. Okay, I'm good. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't speaking out of line. Section 7 redirects those unobligated funds from Chapter 24 SLA 2012 to be deposited into the vaccine assessment account. So that's the sectional analysis of the bill in a nutshell. Some of the changes that were done in Section 1, we added the entire program in there, so it's pretty lengthy and it walks through the program. We've already discussed this at length, I believe, previously. Some of the major changes that we made in there is in Section 18, Section 1809225 A and B. And if I could take you to that on the bill, I believe that is on page 5, lines 6 through line 12. And what we did here is we put in there that an assessable entity may not deny a claim for coverage by a health care provider for vaccines that are not distributed under the program, and then also to protect the provider or to protect the health care professionals and those entities, that a health care provider may not bill a payer for or resale any vaccine that has been distributed under the program to receive a benefit from that. Then as we go on through the bill, we just we change the word recommended to included to coincide with those vaccines that are on the CDC recommended list and those included for by the department. And that pretty much takes us through the bill in a nutshell on the changes that were made, and I would be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have of me at this time.
And one of the questions that had come up was Representative Seaton. You had brought up on the last time we heard the bill on the opt-out for the accessible entities in the window of time. We've changed that and by the wording of changing a voluntary opt-out to, I believe, just an opt-out. And the reason for that is now it's up to the discretion of the commissioner when he sets up the bank and the time period. He can work with the entities and basically give them the time periods that they would need to deal with. Sort of like an insurance company in open season, is what I envision happening,
right.
Saying, hey, this will be what will happen. Because if they opt out voluntarily at any point, it may mess up the bank in the accounting portion of it. So I'm sure that the commissioner will work on that and make sure that window is there.
Appreciate that.
And I knew that was a concern of yours. So.
Any other questions of the committee?
No, that looks like we've got that. Now we had closed public testimony, so will the sponsor come forward? Now, I think you wanted to say a few words, is that right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kathy Geisel, for the record. I just wanted to thank you and your staff for diligently working with me and my office to strengthen this bill. I think it's come out a stronger piece of legislation. It's an important bill which will reestablish that universal vaccine program that we've had for 30 years under Senator Ted Stevens. It's a small but important step in reducing the health care costs for all of our Alaskans. It's also another step toward fulfilling the goals of the Alaska Healthcare Commission and some of their core strategies. So I just wanted to thank you very much for working with my office.
Thank you. We appreciate your hard work and your staff and working with us on this bill and trying to make as best we can a bill that the state could be proud of, and so that we can continue to move forward and vaccine our kids and uninsured and do what we need to do our due diligence. Are there any questions from the committee at this time? No? All right. Let me see here if I got the right script. Let's see here. Is there a motion? What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move SB 169, version Delta, out of committee on its way to finance with its fiscal note and our individual recommendations.
All right, hearing no objections, then House CSB 169 version D moves out of the House Health and Social Service Committee, and we'll take a brief at ease. Back to order again. Next on the docket, we have a motion to bring CSHB 90 before the committee.
Chair, I move HB 90, version Yankee Y, to in front of the committee for discussion.
There are no objections. CSHB 90, version Y, is before the committee for discussion.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Paul Seaton, representative from Homer, for the record. Appreciate the consideration today. Version O is a quite a redraft based on the conversations we've had with the committee from the original bill. The original bill was looking at universal testing for 1 year throughout the state that had two things that were somewhat problematic, and one of them was it was an opt-out kind of thing, so everybody would be tested unless they specifically opted out. And the other one was that although we would get research and information, it was not going to be direct benefit at the time to the newborn babies or the mothers. And so what we have done is we've looked around the country, and there's another project that is going forward looking at pilot project. It's not a research project, a pilot project of having 500 pregnant women voluntarily opt into the program. And we're talking with a number of providers around the state, AYK, Providence, others, to see if we can get a coordinating local entity to take this on. So what we're doing is going from a project that was basically research-based to find out where we were to a project that is based on the application of science in and medical science into our, a community so that we can develop the information based on our own pregnancies here in Alaska. The estimation is that in South Carolina they reduced the preterm births to 7%, and remembering the March of Dimes 2020 goal is to reduce the preterm births to 9.6% nationwide. That saves in our population about 25 preterm births for a savings of approximately $1.3 million. This is a two-year project. It's all put together, and what we're trying to do is just get partnerships within Alaska to work on this. So just covering the changes quickly, we've said it went from research to something that provides medical benefits for mothers and for the babies through this program. It also expanded those to reduce those negative pregnancy outcomes that saves the state a whole lot of money in addition to just the preterm births. It also looks at going over 24 months, so women will be signing up for during that first year, and of course there's a 9-month gestation period, and so it's a 2-year project. It also has a 20% maximum amount that the state would be involved in matching with other partners in the state, whether that's insurance companies, whether that is health clinics, whether ANTHC, whoever that would be. And that would be a maximum of $100,000. And it qualifies, it requires the coordination with a qualified contractor that can do the analysis of the program and give us real data from Alaska as to what the benefits could be from the program. And you have in your backup material the Protect Our Children Now program that is that goal that we have in there. Page 21 of that gives the project cost and schedule and when all that would take place. Of course, that takes that depends on when you get participating partners in the medical community that want to do this, and whether that's going to be on the Kenai Peninsula or in Anchorage or AYK or the North Slope, that's going to be a determination that would be made by those entities. There's nothing that forces anybody to do anything there, here. That is, this is to move our population forward in prevention of unwanted pregnancy outcomes, unintended bad pregnancy outcomes, whether it's preeclampsia, preterm birth, gestational diabetes, all of those things that we talked about. And we also know that there are long-term language impairment benefits if children have adequate vitamin D in their at least during their second trimester of pregnancy. Not only was that original research with 750 women done in Australia, but that also has been confirmed through this same kind of project that's been done in South Carolina since 2004. So, Mr. Chairman, that's what this does. It, you know, it's late in the year. We don't have time to get all the partners together and everything. The intention, my intention, would be to ask the committee to move the bill from committee so we take it and actually have on basis the difference between a universal testing program, which would show up as it is now, the committee substitute O would actually show as the Protect Our Children Now program. It is showing as coordinating through the Department of Health and Social Services. That would not necessarily be the case in the future. It may be one of ANTHC or somebody else, but to get the program set and in, that's the way we set it up. So,
okay. Thank you. And just for clarification, I think we're working on Y, not O, right?
Yes. Sorry. To version Y from O. O was the original version, which was the universal testing.
And, you know, a couple of, quick questions here. As far as research goes, the end goal, from my understanding, is so that the documentation can come out and the research could come out to prove that vitamin D does everything you've said, right? Correct? I mean, so that we can encourage the citizens of Alaska to take vitamin D, but not necessarily tell them to take it.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the problem is that often we don't think that something that's happening in Finland or Australia or Norway or someplace else is or Canada is applicable here. So we want to see if we can have a demonstration project, totally voluntary, that would take place here. And if the medical community sees what we think is going to be seen, then they would adopt this probably within their own practices, but there's nothing that's mandatory in here at all. It's totally voluntary.
And now the study that you quoted, I think, was from Australia. Is that correct?
The White House study from Australia was one that looked at learning impairments. The study that we're looking at here, the Protect Our Children Now, is based on the South Carolina study, Dr. Carol Wagner, and that's all cited in the that project is in your book, including I think it's a 24-page outline of all the entire program, how it's put together, the local people that become involved, the funding mechanism, the costs there, $450,000 is what they're doing in Omaha, Nebraska, and in South Carolina right now with this project. I just think we need to do it here because if we go again and look at these kind of results from South Carolina, which we have through the comparison with the March of Dimes, that we've lowered those preterm births so significantly, we're really not going to know how it does in Alaska until we do a voluntary program in Alaska.
And how long has this study been going on?
The South Carolina study has been going since 2004. National Institutes of Health and the Kellogg Foundation were working on that. That was a research project, and out of that research project that has now gone on and has determined the results of what the that's how they got down to 7%. That's how we know over a long term that those are the kind of goals that we can have. But so this program here is the outgrowth and the actual project that's developed based on the research that's been done since 2004 in South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if this was unfortunate for you or not, but on Saturday I was actually did a pharmacology group with studies, and what was interesting about that 7 hours was we talked about studies and research. And what we come to find out was whenever a study like this happens, a two-year study is useless. It has to be basically brought out a long period of time so that we can double-check the research and what happens. Plus, some of the way they do the studies, because we went through several different types of studies, and some of them, you know, how they were performed basically made all the research useless too, or you know, you get one end of it and you think, oh yeah, great, that's great, and then when you read how they did the research, then all of a sudden it turns out actually it's not really what happened. And so your bill basically is talking about a two-year study. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is that for this to really work, it has to be longer than 2 years. I mean, for us to really understand the numbers and the data. And I understand in Carolina they've been doing this for, well, since 2004, right? So that study at this point may have some relevance and may have some data points that we could actually look at. So what's your take on that?
And I totally agree. And that was a research study that went forward. This is a project that is going forward based on the research that was done there. And, you know, pregnancies have a limited time. It's 9 months. And so you're going to have pregnancy outcomes in 9 months. The thing is, to get enough numbers to do that, you're going to have like the AYK Bethel region, Bethel Hospital has about 600 pregnancies a year. They're considering this. So, you know, some people might not want to participate, and that would be totally at their discretion. There's about 11,000 births in Alaska a year. And so what we would be looking for is enough people, 500 pregnancies. It doesn't matter whether you do those 500 pregnancies over 10 years or you're doing the 500 pregnancies over 2 years, it's 500 pregnancies, which gives you enough data to see what the preterm birth rate is. So if you have 500 pregnancies, you know what your rate of preeclampsia is in the state of Alaska, you know what your rate of gestational diabetes is, you know what your preterm birth rate is. If you have a two-year study that includes 500 pregnancies and you have different rates of those negative pregnancy outcomes, you're going to have the information. And so this is a project that's based on research. This is not predominantly a research project. It's going to give us data, but it's not a research project. It's not. It's putting those scientific that scientific research into action in the medical field.
Okay. And let the record reflect that Representative Tarr has joined us probably about, 10 minutes ago, maybe?
I think so, yes.
Okay,
thanks. Mr. Chairman. I apologize.
Go ahead. Okay. No questions? Oh, Representative Keller.
Yeah. Would you talk about the lack of a pistol load?
I'm sorry. I noticed there's no fiscal note, and you've got the amount, you know, specified in the language, I see, of the bill. But it is here.
There is a draft.
Okay, probably it's in my office, and I apologize. Okay.
Probably wasn't in that pile right
there. Okay. I went through it twice, but my fingers missed it, so in my eyes.
And, Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note from the department is showing a higher amount. Of course, this statute doesn't permit that to be there. So, obviously, we would probably be looking at a different partner that could do this more economically. It's being done more economically through Grassroots Health and Protect Our Children Now program that's already developed. So, what we're trying to do here is let partners know that the state would be willing to participate in improving the health of our pregnant women and their infants for this pilot project. And it's a pilot project for Alaska. It's not a research project per se. The research has been done, and we would be implementing the research that has been done, the research findings in other places.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, wait. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, with some of the other screening opportunities that are, or opportunities is probably not the right word, but other screening that's taking place, have you talked to any of those organizations about incorporating a question about vitamin D intake? I'm just thinking, for example, of a meeting I had with the Native Tribal Health Consortium, and they had just recently adjusted their intake questions based on information that came out of the ACEs study. So now they're actually doing screening for childhood trauma and, at you know, those kind of family violence kind of things. And I'm wondering if an organization that might be interested in helping with this effort or, you know, complementing it by adding that as a question, do you regularly take vitamin D? It'd be, you know, not the same as a blood test scientifically, but just more anecdotal and opportunity for educating folks.
And through the chair, Representative Starr, in this project here, that would be part of the information, the screening, the nutritional information that would be developed at the beginning of those people that voluntarily wanted to be in the program. So this isn't going out with a questionnaire or a test to get a we would generate the scientific basis, but that's not the predominant use. The predominant use is to get healthier moms and healthier babies and demonstrate that for Alaska so that people across Alaska would know whether they wanted to participate in this or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, if mothers can lower their rates of preeclampsia, mm-hmm. gestational diabetes, as well as better outcomes for their children, they may want to participate in this. Mm-hmm. And so ANTHC is one of the people that has been, or one of the groups that has been talking, Native Health Board, mm-hmm. about doing this. South Central Foundation is also looking at this. But the purpose of moving this is so that they can see that the state would be willing to be a minor partner, mm-hmm. but would be willing to participate with them if they want to improve pregnancy outcomes.
Thank you.
And that would be totally a decision that they would make.
And I believe this moves on to finance, right, if it does? Okay. Any other questions? No? All right. I think we have public testimony that is still open on this. So we have Stephen Birch. Did you want to testify on the phone? Stephanie, are you there? Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Stephanie Birch. And I'm the section chief for women, children, and family health in the Division of Public Health, for the record. And I'd like to first say how much we appreciate the changes that have been made by Representative Seaton in version Y. We appreciate that in the title, anyway, he has replaced research with health. We appreciate that the project length has been updated from 12 months to 24 months, and that there's an intent for voluntary population of 500 pregnant women and newborns to be a part of the previous testing group, where in previous versions there was an intent to include everyone. And we can appreciate the fact that we're being directed by the department as a department to provide a matching grant for a nonprofit entity. And that this version of the bill does include treatment and public information after the data has been collected. And that there's also a separate contract. The department would be directed to put out a separate contract with a qualified research grant to provide technical assistance and support, as well as analyzing samples and data. So all of that is to say we really appreciate the changes that have gone into this committee substitute. That said, the department continues to really have the following concerns. Despite the fact that the title has been changed to health, the content of the bill really does point towards conducting an experimental design research study, and in this case, it would be the responsibility as written for the Division of Public Health to carry that forward. This would, because it's an experimental design research, it's really not a core function of the Division of Public Health or of any public health department to conduct research at this level. While the research study is noted to be voluntary, I would state that all research is voluntary. Study subjects are always allowed to be voluntary. In order for this really to be credible research, I think there was a point made about the length of time in which you collect data and the size of your study sample to have enough power. But in particular in Alaska, we're very sensitive to requiring IRB approval, not only from the IRBs of record and for the department that is the University of Alaska, but also tribal IRB approvals. So there's the Alaska Area IRB, as well as individual health corporations have their own institution of review boards, and that is to protect human subject review. So while this particular version talks about a health study, there are still rigorous study design elements that need to be adhered to Both the subcontractor as well as the grantee that is referred to in this version would have to adhere to those particular national standards. There is the fiscal note, apparently, as you have before you, does include state personnel time to administer this piece. And even though the intent, I think, of this version of the bill is to have a contractor and a grantee working on this, it is still the responsibility of the division to oversee the study design and the protocols, to review secondary review of any data that's collected that we're a part of. There are costs that are included in that, both for the contractor as well as for the grantee, as you mentioned. And then finally, once the data is collected and analyzed, it has to be compared with prior research and recommendations. I think the biggest challenge for the department is that at this current time, there are no standard recommendations that are acceptable for recommending vitamin D levels on newborns or pregnant women. And those are important guidelines to have in place in order for us to be publicly educating mothers and babies in terms of what their supplementation amounts would be. I appreciate the commitment that Representative Seaton has to this particular bill and acknowledge the fact that I think there's a difference of opinion in terms of what is out there in the literature and what the recommendations are by the number of organizations that we're really bound to as public health officials to follow. And I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. There's no questions at this time. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we're going to close public testimony on HB 90. Okay, we're going to take a brief at ease. Motion to move CS HB 90 with individual recommendations.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, HB 90, I move that we move it out of committee with attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and that's version Yankee, 0376 Yankee.
Hearing no objections, the CSHB 90 version Y moves out of Health and Social Service Committee. And we'll take a brief at ease while we do the paperwork. Again, and we will adjourn and we'll meet April 10th of 2014. Thank you again for your help. We are adjourned.